And now, from the gay capital of the Western Hemisphere, KSAN San Francisco presents The Gay Life. Good morning, I'm Randy Alfred. This morning I'll be talking to several young gay people about the special problems they face in a society that discriminates both against young people and gay people. We'll also talk with two members of the Coquettes, who are now planning a 10th reunion for that group, which pioneered radical drag in San Francisco in the 70s. Along those lines, let's listen to the Kinks.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes just like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A, Cola. She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her her name and in a dark brown voice she said hello.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN, and I'm Randy Alfred. And our first guests this morning are Martin Warman and Pristine Condition of the Coquettes. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Pristine.
Good morning.
The Coquettes have a 10th anniversary coming up. The 10th anniversary of what?
Go ahead, Martin.
Okay. The 10th anniversary of the first time the Coquettes were ever on stage was New Year's Eve 1970 at the Palace Theater in North Beach. In San Francisco, and this coming New Year's Eve, between 79 and 80, the Cockettes will be reunioning and doing a 10th anniversary turn of the decade spectacle. And we'll be running for five nights.
For all you guys and dolls out there.
Running for five nights or 5 hours?
5 nights. We'll be running for five nights, climaxing with the New Year's Eve performance.
Okay, now what was it? Who were the Cockettes? I mean, there are probably many of our...
Who is she? Who was she? Who does she hope to be?
Really?
The Cockettes were an outrageous theater group in the early 70s in San Francisco who put on midnight shows at a place called the Palace Theater, which is located in North Beach. It's now the Palace Pagoda Theater.
It's a Chinese movie house.
We came on right after the Chinese samurai movies, and we started around midnight, and we had like 1,200 people a night lined up to see us at one point. And
it was real people's spectacle. It was popular spectacle. Glitter, ragtag, thrift
cardboard,
shop drag.
Cardboard, lace, ribbons, makeup, panache.
Women, men.
What is generally called on radio, gender bleep?
Gender bleep. As a matter of fact, the term...
Crossover. Many rivers to cross.
The term gender bleep was first used in relation to the Cockettes. I mean, it was used in order to describe who we were. Or the cleaner one was sexual role confusion.
And due to a particularly vibrant review by the lovely Texan Rex Reed, we were forced into a quick tour of New York.
And white slavery.
And white slavery, which lasted 3 weeks. We opened around Halloween 1971 in New York at the Anderson Theater. Got an incredible opening night audience. I kissed Angela Lansbury on the lips, and, you know, Elaine came and all those things. And after that show, we got rather horrible reviews in the press, except for Sylvester, I think, made out like a bandit. And
New York has never been ready for San Francisco.
No,
that was the point. They were ready for it in San Francisco, but once we got it to New York and were forced into all these days of hype and things, people were ready to see us, but then when we got there, we were so exhausted, and the technical complications that, you know, that happened there forced us not to be quite as vibrant as we had been at the Palace.
Gender bleep like fine burgundy doesn't travel well.
Right. No. I think that 1 month in New York is important, but not nearly as much as the 2.5 years that we spent all together.
I think it was longer than 2.5 years because there have been Cockettes that have continued to perform around the Bay Area.
Be in the theater and do theater work continually.
So the Cockettes lasted for 2.5 years?
Yeah, it lasted from January 70 to officially, the last official Cockette show was July 72 at the House of Good, which then became the People's Temple. We love the irony of that. But that was the last. But that didn't stop the Cockette spirit from continuing. There's a couple of schisms that happened. One foremost thing was that after the first year of the Cockette, there was a schism around doing free theater or theater for money, which meant $2 or $3. And the Angels of Light formed. And the Angels of Light still exist, but they were originally a spinoff from the Cockettes. And Divine came near at the end of the Cockette period and did some live theater in San Francisco, although never officially a Cockette.
A lot of people believe her to be a Cockette.
How many shows did you do?
I mean, him. I'm sorry. Hey, I don't want to confuse you any more than you already are at this point in the morning.
How many shows did you do in 2.5 years?
One a month.
Fresh shows.
Fresh.
A new show every month.
Fresh as
some call it living. No.
Right. I guess Pearls Over Shanghai we repeated like four times.
And Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma was also repeated because it was one of our favorites. But since we opened in New York with Tinsel Tarts, which was a takeoff on the New York Deco scene in Broadway, we should have in reality opened with our 40s Chinese musical. And at least Andy Warhol and Robert Rauschenberg seemed to think that would have been more tasteful since Deco was burned out in 71 by the time we got there.
And did you do movies?
We did old movies, old television, nostalgia.
Weren't movies done on you in addition to the live show?
More than one.
Produce?
Yeah. Yes.
What were those?
Trisha's Wedding.
Elevator Girls in Bondage. We were in a film by Stephen Arnold shown at the film festival in San Francisco in 1970 called Luminous Procurus. It wasn't a Cockette movie, but it was the first time we were on film. There's another film called Palace 71, which is a Halloween show. As a matter of fact, this is a good time to talk about
the retrospective, the Cockette Celluloid Chronicles, which we hope to be presenting at one of your local movie theaters
in October,
right before Halloween. We're going to reshow some of these vintage.
You don't know which local movie theater yet.
Unfortunately, we're not.
Please
armed.
Watch for.
So it's not time for people to run for their pencils.
Not only call theater for title, but
or
call theater for theater.
Listen to The Gay Life, and we will tell you when.
We'll
it
be
is.
Glad to tip you off as soon as we get the theater confirmed. But we hate to build things up and let you down. You know.
Now, what did you represent? Essentially, kind of a leftist camp.
Two words I hate more than anything in the English language.
Both leftist and camp.
I don't think we were camp. I mean, because like the straight traditional drag queens never got what we were doing. And camp is like what they thrive on. We weren't camp. It wasn't only nostalgia. It was like destroying and upsetting the myths of romance, the myths of success, the myths that we'd all been given as kids.
The myths of show business.
Isn't that what traditional camp drag was about, except that it kind of became fossilized in the 50s?
Right. I think the one thing to bring out here is that the Cockette shows were all original music and were all sung by the Cockettes and will continue to be. A lot of the camp drag queen people that you're referring to use voiceover
lip-sync.
Other favorite idols or whatever.
Also, there was never an attempt to look like real women.
Oh, no.
We were never female impersonators. Also, there were our women Cockettes and baby Cockettes and stuff, too. And it was not an exclusively male thing. But as far as the politics of it, I never saw it as leftist. I always saw it as anarchic, which I guess is leftist. I call it tribal anarchy. There is like 20 different people with 20 different energies that they put into different places in order to create a show. And the production evolved as one unit, but it was like input from different places without director, without a central force.
I sort of looked on it as nouveau art gang comedies.
Right.
Nouveau art gang.
That's great.
Well, it's now 10 years later, and
thank God I haven't lost any of mine.
2.5 years of that time that the Cockettes were in existence. Yet, mentioning the word tribal hits on a couple of things. Martin, you were in the Gay Men's Theater Collective production of Crimes Against Nature, which had very tribal elements to it. Certainly the concluding dance. Mm-hmm. And
Bravo.
Pristine, you're involved with Tribal Stomp
right.
this afternoon, I understand,
right.
on
I'll
Sunday.
I'll be in Monterey this afternoon. I don't know. My Learjet is parked out in front of your studios, and I will be
leering.
Flying down to appear at 4:45 this Sunday. I want you all to come down if you haven't come down already. It's still 8 o'clock. You can still get to Monterey.
That's Sunday the 9th, for those of you who are listening to the repeat.
On Monday, at which point I'll be resting after these days in Monterey. But I'll be appearing with Sam Andrew from... Big Brother.
Doing what kind of an act?
Acoustic romantic songs on a open stage and some stand-up. Well, actually not stand-up. You know, I used to be a kneel-down comedian, but now I've gotten into sort of a stand-up comedian capacity.
And wearing some of your old pristine condition drag or your new pristine condition drag?
I will be
drag?
Wearing bright orange as part of my costume. Bright orange metallic pants. That's how you can recognize that I'm on.
Like the Tribal Stomp and the Gay Men's Theater Collective, the Cockettes were also interested primarily in celebration.
Right.
You know, and that's where the spectacle was, with the glitter and the cardboard and the crepe paper and all and the festiveness. I think we were like shamans up on stage at midnight doing, you know, working out everybody else's fantasies, not just our own. And it was real ritual. It was and everybody in the audience looked more gorgeous than we did, or more fabulous, or more outrageous.
Plus,
I guess outrageous was the word of the early 70s, and everybody was doing it, not just us on stage.
Plus there was a lot of audience participation, either voluntary or involuntary participation. Mm-hmm. We thrived on that. Rapport with the audience. In other words, if a set fell down on one of the Cockettes, the audience would guffaw with glee, and we would continue to, you know, keep the show going. And probably if somebody in the audience was too overtly happy they were there, we would tend to single them out for ridicule.
I always liked I always did one of two things in a show. Either I made my entrance from the audience to connect with that, or I would fall into the audience somewhere in the course of the performance.
And I always used to pull my left ear for Carol Burnett.
How many of the original Cockettes will you be getting together for the reunion?
All those who are still alive. That we have had some...
Now, that's not quite true.
Not all of them, but...
Not all of them. We're going to take a select amount. I mean, we're going to edit some of the live ones because they tend to be still... We thought everybody would change after all these years, but once we've been getting together for these meetings, we found that some things never change, right?
Except two people have drastically changed. There are two transsexual people who were Cockettes, and one of them we can't find because
and
we
if
don't
you're
know.
Listening to this program, Bobby Cameron,
Barbara Cameron, we know you're somewhere in the San Fernando Valley, but we don't know your married name. So, if you're out there,
please contact
one of
we
us.
We know the lovely Dahlia has been working in Tahoe, and
right, there are two definite transsexuals, and then most of the other people know about it. Some people are living in L.A. and some people in New York,
like Goldie Glitters is in L.A.
Will be
she'll be coming up.
But some people are not interested because they're doing other lives, but most people definitely are, including probably the one who's considered the most celebrated cockhead is Sylvester at this point, the one who came out of the milieu, and Sylvester will be there in the show.
And Scrumbly will be in the show,
right.
And
John
Martin will be in the show.
This is Dean.
Dusty Dawn, Sweet Pam.
Just want to remind our listeners, this is The Gay Life on KSAN. We're talking this morning with Martin Warman and Pristine Condition about the upcoming 10th reunion of the Cockettes.
Have we given the title of the show to you yet? Right?
No, what is the title of the show?
I, Cockette. 10 years of decadence.
Right. Aha. Uh-huh. Roman theme.
Yes.
Well, because what we see is like the Roman Empire is no different from this declining American Empire.
Costumes by Adrian?
Oh. Costumes by heaven from above.
Right.
Yes.
What, in those 10 years, what lasting effects do you think that the Cockettes have had on the culture of San Francisco? Is there any influence, say, on the punk scene?
Well, I noticed quite a bit of... first of all, I noticed Lou Reed wearing nail polish back in the 72. I noticed David Bowie dressing up.
I saw some
videos of him singing in drag recently, singing Boys in Drag.
I think the stuff that happened after us in rock, Mascara Rock, Alice Cooper, what Bette Midler started doing with her campiness, all this stuff was part of the Cockette, what is the word, zeitgeist?
We don't want to be too cocky about this, but we realized that they had producers and more money than we had, and we realized a lot of them watched us and got off on it, you know?
We
believe in share and share alike. I mean, I love share.
Will you invite them to the reunion?
I think people will know about it. I think that the word is already out. I mean, there's already been a scoop in the L.A. Times. Goldie Glitters gave an interview down there and scooped the show down there. So it's they know. I think the influence is Lillian Roxon, who was a woman who was writing for the New York Daily News when we were there in 1971, gave us a wonderful retrospective review. And she said, every time you see a rhinestone too many or a sequin out of place, the Cockettes have been there in fashion and style. And one of the things that I, Cockette, deals with is not just the parody of the Channel 13 or Channel 9 on this coast series, the PBS series of old Rome. It also has to do with fashion and style, of which the Cockettes were a real important part.
Along with imagination and we hope a lot of magic that we can bring into the production.
Well, in the early 70s, you were taking on the dress of the 50s and 60s. So as you prepare for New Year's Eve of 1980, are you going to deal with the new fashion genres of the late 70s?
Right.
Clone hoods,
right.
And
clone hood,
bandanas.
Neoclassical revival,
right?
Yes.
Topical toga wear for the 80s,
uh-huh.
Or you know, nuevo wave,
right.
Fashion.
I mean, opening trade with China and putting them in Western wear togas.
I love bright colors. I love red.
Uh-huh. It's about aesthetics.
And pink.
Let's hear it for aesthetics.
May I have a tissue, please?
So when the reunion again
will be the 5 nights preceding New Year's.
Do you have the theater or tickets on sale already?
The tickets will be on sale probably in October with the advent of the first thing to look for our audience to know.
It's a hammer for your piggy bank poised over the
first thing to look for is further prospective backers for this show. We do have some. And
so if you would like to be an official Cockette backer,
right.
Please send a card or a letter to Randy here at the station and I'll check with him and perhaps we too can make you a little money. On the side, hey.
Right, so we're going to do first the Cockettes on Celluloid, which will be the film retrospective, and at that point, the tickets will go on sale for the New Year's weekend.
So you'll be seeing Trish's Wedding, Elevator Girls in Bondage, and
Luminous Procurus
and some clips.
Although the films really just give barely a taste of what we are on stage.
Right. If you haven't seen the Cockettes live, you haven't seen the Cockettes. And you'll get another chance to do it come the end of this year.
Uh-huh.
And we'll keep you informed.
Before that, so you can... to see at least one of them. Martin's going back to New York.
Right, I'll be back after Thanksgiving to work more on the show.
So keep tuned to The Gay Life on KSAN, which you're
listening to now. Get out those winky dink screens and those Crayolas and keep those cards and letters coming in because, gosh, we love you all out there. You made us what we are now.
Thank you, Pristine Condition, and thank you, Martin Warman.
Thank you, Randy.
Life is
This is The Gay Life on KSAN. I'm Randy Alfred, and we have with us now, for a discussion of the special problems that young gay people face, Jocelyn Siegel of the Youth and Sexuality Services of the Center for Special Problems in San Francisco, and Laura Strong and Jim Epstein, who are gay-identified young people who will be able to tell us about what those problems are. Good morning to all of you. Jocelyn, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
And Laura?
Fine.
And Jim.
Fine.
Good morning and welcome to KSAN. What you're working at the Center for Special Problems, Jocelyn, in the Youth and Sexuality Services, which is an implicit recognition that there are special needs in that area of counseling in the city. What do you see as the major problems that gay youth face, and what are the main problems that your clients at the Center for Special Problems and in that program bring to you?
Most young people come from families where anything concerning sex is not discussed. And for the most part, a lot of the young people coming in have yet to be able to discuss with their parents or to know where to get support if they have issues around sexual identity.
So that it's a problem not just for young gay people, but for young people of all kinds.
Where I work, or
in general, parents don't want to discuss sexual problems. Is what you're saying?
Right.
So,
and I wouldn't put the word problem. Issues concerning sexuality.
Okay, but there are, for instance, in a society that discriminates against young people.
Okay.
And in a society that discriminates against gay people, gay young people face double discrimination, perhaps triple if they're also women, and perhaps quadruple if they're third world.
Right.
So what is that meant in terms of, I mean, you're a counselor there, but you're...
Peer counselor.
Okay. You're just 21 yourself now, right?
Right.
So all three of the people I have here, all three of you are aware of what those problems are. What are they? Any of you? What do you think has been the main?
Well, I think places to go. When you're under 21, you can't, you know, get into bars. When you're under 18, when you're under 21, you can't get into bars, and there doesn't seem to be much recognition, you know, of gay young people, that gay young people exist. And I think that people in the community need to know that, you know, there are gay young people out there, and gay young people have special needs, and people need to be really sensitive to them. There really needs to be places to go for gay young people. There needs to be some, you know, support in schools. And there needs to be a lot of, you know, the stereotypes, you know, broken. Because, you know, there are gay young people, and there will always be gay young people.
Okay, well, one of the problems with not being able to get into bars is that, for gay men especially, the bar is a social center. And also for lesbians as well, but probably to a lesser extent in terms of the great importance that it assumes. Also, don't older gay men, for instance, have a fear in dealing with gay men under 18 that they're dealing with problems with the law?
Yeah, that is true. The way the age of consent is, it's illegal for anyone under 18 to have a sexual relationship with someone over 18.
And
so that presents a lot of problems.
And theoretically, for instance, a gay man who even took a gay man under 18, a young gay person under 18, to a place where a lot of other gay people hung out could be charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor, even though nothing sexual at all happened.
That's right.
You raise your eyebrows, Jocelyn.
I was just wondering, if he would be charged, I think it's important to find out from the young person whether or not he was coerced to go there, if he went there willingly.
Oh, for sure. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with
it.
I'm just saying that the law doesn't necessarily make that distinction. If someone somewhere wants to be nasty about prosecuting someone, they don't have to prove very much.
Right, okay.
Even if they're doing it because they suspect more happened than they proved to her, but they don't have to prove very much in order for that to be part of the harassment. I personally didn't come out of the closet until I was around 25, 26, 27. Obviously, there are people now who are becoming aware of their being gay. And I mean coming out of the closet to myself to begin with. It was just a question, to a large extent, of self-awareness. Now, obviously, people are becoming aware of being gay in their early teenagerhood and before. And that's something that I really have no understanding of what that's like in terms of being 14, say, in high school or in junior high school, and thinking, am I the only one, or what is that like? I mean, I'm just projecting.
I think that this generation now perhaps might be the first generation coming out as young people and being gay. I don't know. I think that a lot of the young people nowadays are seeing what's happening around them, you know, what's happening to people that perhaps they consider themselves to be like. And it's like there's a lot of oppression, you know, and I myself, you know, I came out because I feel I have four strikes against me being young and being a woman in third world and gay. And I really don't need anything else. So it's like I'm going to take whatever I can off my back as soon as I can.
How do you take it off your back?
Well, like programs like this, you know, just expressing my views and my opinions and outreach to other young gay people and going through support groups and various things throughout the city.
As another third world person and the work that I do, there's outreach for women, trying to reach sexual minority women is really hard. They're not as blatant and as out there as young men. They're not as blatant as, and as, oh, what's the other word? Just
exuberant.
Exuberant as young men and men in general. And being third world, you find in the communities where, let's say, Catholicism is really strong, of course you don't talk about sex. And I've spoken to groups of third world youth that were predominantly straight, and they've expressed to me that, you know, it says this in the Bible, a man had this, and woman had this, and they fit together. And then perhaps if you tell them that, well, if that's considered, if homosexuality is considered a sin, and you throw on them about how in order for us to be here, Adam and Eve, or Eve had to have sex with her son, and that's incest, and that's a sin, and it goes on, and they begin to raise their eyebrows and go, oh, wow, there are a lot of things we're doing that are all sin.
What kind of programs, for instance, does the Center for Special Problems have? Suppose a young gay person comes in or calls up the center in some sense of bewilderment about feeling alone or...
Oh, there's a young lesbian rap group that happens on Fridays from on Thursdays from 6 to 8. And there's I'm in the process of trying to form a third world support group for gay and bisexual women. I have a strong feeling that there are a lot of young women out there who don't know if whether or not they're gay or straight and are just toiling and aren't really quick to label themselves. And plus being third world and having to deal with relating to non-third world people and how men relate to you as third world and having to confront that all the time and continually assert yourself, especially as a sexual minority, is really significant and needs special attention, I think, in a group like that.
We'll be mentioning a variety of groups in the course of this interview, but grab your pencil and paper now, because near the end we'll tell you how to get in touch with all of them. Isn't there a general bias in our culture that assumes that young people aren't sexual at all? I mean, isn't that reflected in law, theoretically? Until you're 18, you don't have any sexual rights, whatever.
Or if they are, they're in a phase.
In a phase.
A phase. They're going through a phase.
Laura.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if Jocelyn brought that up for any specific reason, but a couple of years ago I was hospitalized and my therapist, my doctor that had been my doctor for a year, told me that my feelings of being homosexual and, you know, all the trips that I were going, that I had been going through for like 2 or 3 years was all a phase and that I would get over it, you know, and it's like I didn't expect that from a person in her position calling themselves a psychiatrist, you know, especially, you know, in this century. And I don't know, it's like children, young children, I feel, are sexual, you know, or that they have, you know, those feelings, they have sexual feelings, whether or not they're labeled as such, you know, they're there. And even as an adolescent, you know, a lot of young children are afraid because they've been conditioned to be afraid. And I don't know, I think society is just, you know, putting one over on us.
And you don't intend to let that happen any longer?
Well, I'm going to do my part. You know, I mean, I can't, you know, I can't save the world. I've learned that, you know, but I'm going to do everything I can so that another young person doesn't grow up the way I did, being afraid and feeling isolated and just with nowhere to turn.
I have with the work I do, I have this little commitment, not little so much, but to raise consciousness among non-gay youth. For example, you know, so you have to start by defining what's a homosexual, what's a transsexual, what's a transvestite. For the most part, I've heard a homosexual is a man that wants to be a woman and a woman that wants to be a man.
These are the images that yes, people come to you.
Yes, or a man that wears dresses, or a man that goes out pinching asses or whatever. I think a lot having to do with the women's movement, women have been really encouraged to be what they are, to not necessarily have to look to a role model as you had some years ago when you had a lot of butch and femme relationships among lesbians. I really feel supported, that I could feel that I'm a woman and just assert myself for who I am, and try and encourage other women to look at themselves as what they are, and if they have questions, to be able to feel free to talk about that.
Do you facilitate rap groups or problem-solving groups or whatever you want to call it?
I co-facilitate, yes.
Okay. Now, how would you go about trying to share that sense of strength?
Trying to share it?
Assuming that that's what you would want to do in one of those groups.
I don't know if it's...
The sense of self-determination and assertion you were talking about. We can come back to that if you're stumped by it. Jim, you had something to say about society ignoring youth as sexual people, I think.
Well, I just think that I think society, you know, needs to realize that the gay young people have needs, and people have to start identifying, you know, what their needs are, and what things can be done. And I think that one of the most important things is outreach. There needs to be outreach, you know, in the schools. People don't even, you know what gay is in the school. You know, gay is just a stereotype of a person that, you know, acts, you know, a certain way. And that's what I thought until I came out when I was 17. And I came out and, you know, I realized there really wasn't anything for me. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know, you know, where to meet people, other gay people. You know, you can't get into bars. And, you know, bars aren't that great anyway, but there really needs to be, you know, places where gay young people can meet, you know, and organize. Because it can really be frustrating, you know, when you're young and gay and when you don't know where to go or anything.
Is it any better in San Francisco than other places? Did any of you come to San Francisco from less liberated cities? Jocelyn?
I came directly to San Francisco from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I'd been involved with the woman, and we got involved over there, and we met each other in a bisexual rap group. And prior to the group, I had toiled with feelings of having strong attractions for women, and I decided to go to this group and went through all the changes to get to the group because, oh my God, here's a group that says I'm this, and I didn't know how to deal with that in the beginning. And then in the group, I found that there were a lot of women asking the same questions of themselves and talking about fantasies with women. And I really condone meeting other gay people, other bisexual people in groups. I think it's, you get down to a lot of stuff, I think.
And there's permission to express yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Jim? Did you grow up in the Bay Area? Or?
I grew up in Connecticut. I came out here when I was 16 and lived on my own.
Were you a runaway?
Well, I left home to come out here to live out here with my brother. And I ended up living on my own in Berkeley. And then I moved to San Francisco. But I hadn't even identified, you know, that I was gay yet because I didn't really know... I just thought of the stereotypes, a gay person, you know, that someone that was different or something. I knew that I had, you know, gay feelings, but I didn't really, identify them. But oddly enough, I had gone back to Connecticut for a visit, and that's where I met a gay person. And then I came back out here to San Francisco, and I was looking for, you know, places to go, and, you know, I met some people. And, you know, things started happening, gay young people, you know, started to organize more. And that's, you know, that's really important because, you know, when you're young, you don't have any rights anyway. But being gay and young, you know, is like a double bind. And it's, you know, it's really hard, you know, to try and make it.
Laura?
I was born and raised in San Francisco, but this past summer I've been up in Washington. And, like, I had thought about moving up there, but one thing that really surprised me was that Washington, it seems so... I don't know, perhaps 20 or 30 years behind in their young people, or even in their middle-aged people trying to come out and trying to have groups and support and different type of organizations and stuff, you know. I was really surprised to see, I don't know, how much different San Francisco is in even the way of young people coming out.
Coming out and getting organized, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. So... San Francisco's got more in the way of support networks for young gay people. But what about outside having groups that are beginning to form and places that, for a start, someplace to go or so forth. What about on the street? What about everyday life? Is there more acceptance of young gay people in San Francisco, assuming because there's more acceptance of gay people than other places? Can you feel more freedom on the streets of the city?
I, coming from back east, coming from New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, feel more... I'm not comfortable with the word freedom. You see visibly more gay people. How do you know someone's gay? Well, you feel it.
Gaydar.
Gaydar. Right.
Any other thoughts, Laura?
For me, since I've come out, I felt more comfortable, you know, recognizing other young gay people. And, I don't know, just being out. But one thing I find is that I'm very paranoid, I guess, because, you know, when I walk by a bunch of boys, young boys, you know, and I hear them go, well, let's go, you know, beat someone up, you know, up in the Castro, you know, it's like, I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm glad I'm not up there, but still, you know, they're going to go bother someone else who's not, you know, not doing anything to them. And that's what I'm afraid of. That's why I don't like being out in the streets.
Jim, how do you feel about San Francisco as a public in the city? What kind of freedom or lack of freedom you feel on the streets?
Well, I think on the streets, you know, the streets are just kind of a hard place to meet people anyway. Castro Street, you know, people just walking, you know, up and down the street. Hopefully, you know, people can meet, you know, in other places. But, you know, it's hard when you're, you know, when you're gay, you know, when you're young.
But I mean, but other than meeting people on the streets, just in terms of whether or not you feel free to be, to hold a hand of someone of the same sex, or to wear an earring if you're a man, or to dress butcher than women are supposed to dress in this, in other places,
I feel okay about that, about walking down, you know, walking around in San Francisco, you know, holding hands with someone, and you know, most areas of town, or you know, some areas of town anyway.
I, as a woman, I can't say that I can feel comfortable walking all over San Francisco. I'm continually conscious of the fact that there are men out there, and that many times if I'm walking down the street by myself, I'll be guaranteed to be harassed, and I have to deal with that. And if I'm in a really upset mood, I deal with it, and I don't take anything, even though it's hard for a lot of the men to hear a woman talking back at them. I know... At night, especially, that's if I'm walking in certain areas. I don't know if I should say the areas.
I'm sure people have an idea.
I'm sure you all know out there, all you women, that if I'm with a woman, I don't want to hold her. If I want to hold her hand, I know I should not hold her hand, because I don't want to have to provoke anything on top of just being a woman and walking on the street and, you know, asking for it.
Some of the problems that one frequently hears about with respect to gay youth, at least if we were to be reading the newspapers, say, are drugs and prostitution. Do those come up often at Center for Special Problems, Youth and Sexuality Services?
More young male prostitutes, yes. Since I've been there, there haven't been any women, since I've been there, coming in with as young gay prostitutes, female prostitutes.
I think that a lot of gay males get into prostitution because, you know, it's hard for you to find a job, you know, when you're young. You know, it's minimum wage is $2.90 an hour. And a lot of the jobs that are available, you know, to young people are just, you know, working at fast food restaurants and places like that. And when you're gay and, you know, when you're young, you know, when you're lonely, you know, when you want to meet people and everything, sometimes prostitution is like an outlet for some, you know, gay young people.
So that it just gives a way for people who might be afraid of dealing with gay young people, as people can deal with them, can deal with a young gay man as a prostitute, as a hustler.
Rather than as a person.
And it's a ritualized form of meeting and interaction.
Right. But that's why a lot of, you know, gay young people are out there hustling, because there's nowhere else, you know, for them to go. And they're just hanging out on the street, and somebody offers them some money if they don't have a job.
I would stress gay young men.
Okay, so that it's not a pattern, for instance, that young young lesbians fall into? Ever?
There are, sure, there are lesbian-identified prostitutes, of course. You know, don't mix business with pleasure, but... but it's... The young women that come in, many of them are new in town, and they, since I've been there, let's say, heard of the Sexual Minority Youth Service Directory, and they heard about the center, and they heard about the rap group, and they want to come and find where they can learn about other young lesbians or other young groups, or finding a place where they can have shelter.
Is there a corresponding source of what appears to be at least easy money? I'm not saying that it is, but as compared to working in a fast food restaurant, what?
Okay, the issue of drugs and prostitution, I feel, is not specifically like pointing at gay people. It's an issue in itself, just with young people as it is. I mean, and older people too. But another way for making quick money is selling drugs. I mean, it's a big business, you know.
So you don't feel that this is necessarily a gay problem, but it's a problem of young people in general? But doesn't it compound all, though? I mean,
yeah.
If someone is a third world gay, drug dealing, drug using hustler on the streets, that, you know, his chances of running into police problems are 99 and 44 one-hundredths percent.
Well, what I feel is like, I am classified as an alcoholic and a drug abuser. And I think a lot of that stemmed from the fact that being young and growing up and trying to hide the fact that I was a homosexual because it was quote-unquote wrong, you know, the alcohol and the drugs made it easier for me to accept myself and to be able to play off being straight or whatever when, you know, I was with people who were straight.
Okay, so when, relative to the time that you came out, when did you make the acknowledgement that you were an alcoholic?
I was hospitalized for that, so they made the acknowledgement.
Did you resist that, or did you go along with them and realize it once you were hospitalized?
Did I resist what?
They made the acknowledgement for you. Did you then resist it, or did you accept it immediately? Did you accept
that I was an alcoholic, yeah, or that I was going in the hospital?
That you were an alcoholic.
I agreed with them because I knew how much I was drinking, you know, other than the fact that what I told them, in which from what I told them, they figured I was an alcoholic, so I knew I was.
Mm-hmm. So you feel that there's a connection in that the drugs and alcohol are something that people are driven to as a way of dealing with their problems when there isn't a support network, when there aren't groups to go to, when there isn't counseling.
Not specifically dealing with their problems, but finding a way out of dealing with them because, you know, it makes it easier to accept yourself if you're on drugs or have something...
crutch of some...
Yeah.
Something to help you get you through. I mean, not just if you're gay, but... I mean, there's so many people out there using all kinds of substances because it's a hard world or whatever.
Vices.
I don't know. Sometimes they help.
But the people for whom it is doubly hard or triply hard would seem have more pressure towards dealing with it. What percentage of the people who you roughly, of the people that you see at the Center for Special Problems, Jocelyn, what proportion would you say are using more drugs than they want to be using, just in terms of their own perception of
it? I see more women as a peer counselor than I see young men. The young men I see are the men I meet out on the street when I'm doing street work around Polk, mm-hmm, Street. Using, of the young men, I would say most of the men are using a lot of drugs. Of the young women, more than they want to, I can't say.
Well, if they self-identified as a problem, then it would be more than they want to. That's all I was getting at. What are you said you were a street worker. What do you do in that connection?
Okay.
This is as part of your work.
Right,
at the
this
Center
is
for
as
Specialty.
Part of my work. Apparently, there was this idea to clean up the Tenderloin in the Polk Street area, and the merchants were complaining. And the idea went through the city government, and such that it came back down to the community mental health services and said, okay, why don't we have some street workers out in Polk Street to deal with the young people, as opposed to just busting them, throwing them in Juvie Hall. And as a street worker, I go out there and I approach, for the most part, young males, because that's what's predominantly on Polk Street. And I ask them if they've seen the resource directories, and usually they haven't, and they take them. But approaching a person isn't so easy. You don't do it the first day out there. You have to hang out on Polk Street for a while, and so they know who you are. And sometimes I go out with a male partner. Some of me thinks that's a little disruptive, because usually the first thing they think of when they see you is that you're the police.
Mm-hmm.
The Polk Street merchants, from what I gathered, are still complaining about the youth problem on the streets, but they're complaining about the punks, not about the transient hustlers. But it's the transient hustlers who are getting busted.
Okay, now this interview is in and of itself an opportunity for some outreach, and I'm sure that people listening out there this morning have heard about programs or groups or so forth that they would like to get in touch with. You mentioned a gay and sexual minority youth resource directory. Now, that has what kind of resources listed?
Oh, it has switchboards, emergency clothing, legal services, places where there's some jobs, medical, counseling, dental, transportation, community centers, and gay organizations. For the most part, all who are staffed by people who are sensitive to and knowledgeable of gay issues.
Okay, so it's pencil and paper time out there. How can someone get a copy of the gay and sexual minority youth directory? Where can they obtain that from? Can they get that from the Center for Special Problems?
Yes, they can.
Okay, now where would they write for that?
They can write Center for Special Problems, Youth and Sexuality Services, 2107 Van Ness, 94103.
Okay, that's 2107 Van Ness, San Francisco, 94103. And the phone number there is 558-4801?
Right.
And they can ask for the directory and they'll be sent a copy of it.
Right.
Okay, what kind of rap groups could they get in touch with as well? There are some I know you run just for gay people under 21, and some that have special focuses like third world groups, third world women's groups, drug groups.
Okay, there's a young men's sexuality rap group, and it's for men of all kinds of cultural origins who want to explore same-sex or opposite-sex attractions. And if they would like to participate in this group, they should call Daniel Ostro at 558-4801.
That's a good general number for getting any information that might slip by this time. Is that right? What are the other? There's a drug use group. Are you involved with that, Laura?
To my knowledge, that group has not been organized yet, but it is in the plans.
It's outreach for a drug use group for sexual minority women is very hard.
Okay, what are the drop-in groups that someone can just walk into? Why don't we say where those are and when they meet?
Well, presently I've been in a young woman's problem-solving group for about a year now. It meets one night a week, which is Thursday from 6 to 8. It fluctuates between 6 and 12 women. Basically, we just talk out, problems and conflicts.
Okay. Where and when does it meet?
Oh, I'm sorry. At the Center for Special Problems on Thursdays from 6 to 8.
Okay, so the young women's group is Thursday, 6 to 8, at 2107 Van Ness.
On the second floor, yes.
San Francisco. Now, what about the gays under 21 group? When and where does that meet? Do you know about that, Jim?
I think that meets at Thursday nights at 7
gay,
o'clock.
Gay Community Center.
The Gay Community Center, 330 Grove Street.
Okay, so that's, now is that a mixed women's and men's group?
Yes.
So that's Thursdays at 7 at 330 Grove, a mixed women's and men's group, and the women's problem-solving group is?
Thursdays from 6 to 8 at the Center for Special Problems.
At the Center for Special Problems. Okay, and if people want any more information, also there's a newsletter that's come out. There's been one issue of the Gay Youth Community News, and I think that can probably be also be obtained through the Center for Special Problems if the people want to get in touch with that network. The number to, the important number to remember is 558-4801 because you can get referrals from that number through the Youth and Sexuality. The other thing is for, you can send to the Gay Youth Community Coalition at 3759 17th Street. That's Gay Youth Community Coalition, 3759 17th Street, San Francisco 94114. Our guests on the Gay Life this morning have been Jocelyn Siegel of the Youth and Sexuality Services of the Center for Special Problems, Laura Strong, and Jim Epstein. Thank you very much, all of you.
Thank you.
A sweet life.
Gay Rights Advocates presents an evening of reading and conversation with Christopher Isherwood, Thursday, September 13th, at the Everett Junior High School at 450 Church Street. Admission is $5, and it's a benefit for Gay Rights Advocates. Tickets are available at Gay Rights Advocates at 540 Castro or at bookstores throughout the city. A benefit film showing of Paul Jacobs and the Nuclear Gang for Gays Against Nuclear Power will take place on September 20th, Thursday, at 7:30 p.m. at the Women's Building, formerly Dover Hall, at 3543 18th Street. The Women's Building is wheelchair accessible, and child care will be provided. The donation is $2.50. Giving the United Way? Then give gay. Ask your United Way representative for a donor option card, and then designate one of the following to receive your donation. Operation Concern, a member of the United Way, Pacific Center for Human Growth, also a member, or Gay Rights Advocates, the Lesbian Rights Project of Equal Rights Advocates, the Job Power Program of Community Transitions, and the Harvey Milk Neighborhood Center. Make sure your gift goes to one of your own. Give gay through the United Way. That about wraps it up for this morning on The Gay Life. I'm Randy Alfred. I co-produced the show with Fred Green. I also write a column in The Sentinel called Taking Sides, which is available throughout San Francisco. And if you're listening on Sunday morning, this show will be repeated late Monday night at 1 a.m. So tell a friend about The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco.